You may be like, Corybeth, you're a crazy conspiracy theorist. No, I'm not a theorist. I'm a conformist. I think most of what we point to has come to pass. Let's go.
The most energetic, fit, and stress-resilient people on the planet practice daily habits to keep their hormones balanced, their gut healthy, and their muscles and mind strong. Welcome to That Fitness Couple. We're Mike and Corybeth Lepowski, founders of Pure Physique.
This podcast is designed to provide you with everything we've discovered and continue to discover about nutrition, training, and lifestyle. Today, we all live hectic lives.
So we've made it our mission to make your fitness time efficient and to build you up. Hope you share and enjoy. Let's dive into today's episode. Let's go.
One of the most important issues that we can discuss as we start this new year is a brand new Netflix documentary that debuted January 1st called You Are What You Eat, A Twin Study. Now, at first glance, some may say, oh my gosh, you know, this looks kind of like The Game Changers. And in that regard, you would absolutely be right. What we seek to do today is not give you opinions, but rather really walk through a lot of the research that Mike has been conducting about facts. And while you're going to see vegan propaganda really positioned as science, we really want to come in as a neutral voice. So you may or may not like what we're about to say, but I just want to point to the fact that we don't have a vested interest in telling you to eat vegetables or meat. We seek no benefit from that. We don't have a cattle farm. We don't have a dairy farm. We also don't have vegetables or herbs that we're selling you. We always want to come in as a neutral view. And the reason I think that this is so important is a lot of propaganda will come out on TV that causes us to think differently. And I'm two of the three episodes into this series specifically. And I looked at Mike and I'm like, wow, if I had no backing or background, I would be like, oh my gosh, I got to become a vegan tomorrow. You know, but the problem with that is we know too much. We're too educated at this point. And I think that it serves as a great disservice for the average person who really just doesn't know. And so we're gonna paint both sides of this picture, but really come in with facts and not try to convince you to go one way or the other.
Well, with it being the new year, obviously, this is the time in which people are seeking out change. They are looking for the newest way, the best way, the most effective way that they can lose body fat in particular or improve their health. I mean, that is the focus. And what easier place to go and find that than Netflix? And it's just very convenient that Netflix has been used many, many times as a board for people to get information that might not be completely factual. And so in preparation for this, there were people outside of me, smarter people, some of whom we've had on this podcast, who looked into the actual research that this was done on. And I think it's important that we just really dive into that, because what we see with documentaries such as this, and what was interesting about this one is this was not just your typical documentary like The Game Changers were, where it was your hour and a half, hour and 45 minute film, because that's what it was. It was a film that entertained, that also created a lot of fear, brought up a lot of mistruths, and positioned really well. And even had us thinking initially that maybe we should be eating more plant-based, maybe we should be vegetarians, right? According to what we're seeing. And that's problematic, right? But that was just an hour and 40 minute film. This is an actual limited series. So people are going into this, treating it as if it's a TV show, and each episode is gonna be about 45 minutes to an hour. And so over the course of the series, I mean, you're going to have several hours worth of being indoctrinated into their belief system.
Well, and I think what's so important is, you know, you look at any research study, and of course, at the end of every research study that's published, it's, you know, are there any conflicts of interest? And of course, you know, oftentimes, like, no conflicts of interest. I think with this one, it's so important that the lead researcher on this has been a vegetarian for 40 years. And I know we're going to get into all those facts, but I just think it's so important for us to paint the picture. I don't care if you want to eat vegan or carnivore or omnivore, or you want to be primal, or you want to be, you know, keto, or you want to be whatever it is that you want to be. At the end of the day, like, we're going to present information. You're going to decide what you do with it. But we are definitely going to walk through a lot of the facts and a lot of the stuff that you're not going to see. We're not going to add dramatic music to present the facts as they did in this film. I mean, every time they showed like a cattle farm, it was like, you know, like a really flat note, very gloomy, you know? And then they showed us like, you know, a 5-star vegan restaurant and it was like this upbeat music. So again, like be an aware consumer, and that is our sole purpose today, is to help you make the best decisions for your health.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, with that said, let's just begin with what this entire series was based upon. And it was based upon research that was conducted at Stanford University, specifically by Dr. Christopher Gardner, who, as Corey Beth was mentioning, has been a vegetarian for 40 years. Okay, so we're just going to go with the facts here.
I think I said vegan, so I'm okay. Mistaken. He's a vegetarian.
So,
thank you.
A vegetarian for 40 years. And the study, which the entire documentary was based upon, was already published in the Journal of American Medical Association. And the title of it was Cardiometabolic Effects on Omnivorous versus Vegan Diets in Identical Twins, a Randomized Clinical Trial. Let's just start with this. Not only the name or the title of the research, but even the show itself, it's very fascinating. Why? Because we're talking about twins. And in here, they make a point that it's identical twins. So whatever we see happen, one way or the other, should be definitive proof that one direction or one way of eating is better than the other. So just keep that top of mind. So throughout this episode, and I think that this is going to probably become a series of episodes on this, since we're talking about a series where even us, as we're going through it, we're listening to what's being told, like, that's not true, that's going to have to be addressed. I have a feeling that we're going to be addressing a lot of the episodes in further episodes of That Fitness Couple. But that said, today, I really wanted to base a lot of our conversation around the study itself. And I'm going to cite a previous guest of ours, Zoe Harcombe, who you guys will remember as the researcher's researcher. And then she is one of the most reputable people out there when it comes to taking research studies and then further breaking it down and dissecting the information, not just taking the headlines that are typically put out there in articles, but really saying, hey, this is what the data says. So she had some really great insight on this study. And then also another very reputable nutrition journalist, Nina Teichholz, did a great piece on this as well. Again, same thing, diving into what the data actually says. So again, the first question that many of you might be asking is, why would we dedicate an entire episode or a series of episodes to debunking a film? And the answer is simple. And this is right up Corey Beth's alley, which is dating back to the early 1900s, entertainment has been used as a vehicle for propaganda. And it's also used to desensitize us to the things that are happening around us. So I'm going to just pause there because I feel like this is right up your alley.
Yeah, well, I think what's been so fascinating is, you know, we look at programming, you know, television programming. Its mission is in its name. It's to program, you know, and various channels, you know, you're flipping channels. It's to channel that programming into you. And you may be like, Corey, you're a crazy conspiracy theorist. No, I'm not a theorist. I'm a conformist. I think most of what we point to has come to pass. And while it sounds crazy in the beginning, you know, the difference between a conspiracy theorist and the truth is 3 years. So just give it some time, you know, and it'll come out. But here's what's crazy is back in the 50s and 60s, the CIA had an operation called Operation Mockingbird. And basically what they were testing was, could we use media to change people's opinions? And so that is fact. You can read articles on it. You can actually go to, where was it, CIA.gov, and it'll tell you all about Project Mockingbird transcripts. A lot of those sealed records actually were released in January of 2020. And so you can read through all that information and see the high-level government officials, senators, Congress, you name it, that were involved in projects like these that sought to change public opinion on different topics through programming. So I will just leave it at that.
All right. Well, I think that along those lines, what we are being set up for, though, in this documentary is to start accepting things other than real food.
Crickets. And Impossible Burgers.
It's that, and that there's a lack of real food. I mean, that was one of the first things that I noticed when we started watching these first two episodes, is immediately they got into how we can't feed the world on meat, that there's just not enough available. And so already very early in this documentary, you're being told that, hey, you know, the way to the future is not going to be through the foods that we've survived on all this time. And, you know, that we need to rely on these other types of foods, which is interesting because we know that real food is the way to get bioavailable nutrients. But as you'll see, we're going to be set up to be told that, hey, there's a better way than this. And instead of living on meat and eggs and butter and milk and all these other things that we should be
things
relying on,
things that have sustained us for thousands of years. Yes,
correct.
Absolutely. Those are no longer good.
No, we should consume fake meat.
All right, we're getting too opinionated.
No, well, genetically modified fruits and vegetables, ultra processed foods, and none of that stuff provides us with adequate nutrition. I know, we're trying to be neutral here, but some of this stuff is just infuriating.
Yes.
But the way that I see it, that there's really, you know, three reasons why this is happening. And it's social, it's political, and it's financial.
It's definitely financial.
So that said, I mean, socially, let's go there, right? What would be the social reasons why they would be producing a film like this? And I think that it's pretty obvious. You've had organizations around for a very long time, organizations like PETA, and others that really are promoting this agenda of animal rights, which again, we're not anti-animal rights, but what it is when things like that are taken to the extreme with organizations like that, they're always trying to find a way to push that narrative, whether or not it's true. It's more about the end game and not necessarily, you know, what the truth is.
Well, I think this, you know, an organization like PETA, listen, I think there's always good intentions behind an organization like that. We want to fight for animal rights. Like, we want to make sure that animals are cared for and they're harvested in a sustainable way. But what I always think about is, does that stand the test of time? You know, if you took a PETA activist and put them back in the 1800s or 1900s and they're like, stop eating, you know, like, don't eat that, I think it would be looked at as kind of crazy. You know, because then why are animals put here? You know, why? Okay, there's a lot of arguments there. But, you know, I do think that a lot of it does come down to virtue signaling. You know, it's people wanting to have a purpose and make a difference and things like that. And again, we should be farming in a sustainable way. We should be treating animals well. I think we stand in agreement with all of it. I think, though, that saying that we should not eat animals at all, it's such a far extreme. And I think whenever we go to any extreme, it's dangerous.
Well, we've had ranchers on this show who have said that they make it a mission, as well as all the ranchers they know, to do things in the most sustainable and ethical way possible. So that's what's sort of infuriating, is that when you meet the real people who are doing this stuff for a living, harvesting animals, and they're telling you that, hey, I invite you to come to our ranch, come to our farm, see how we're doing things. And then the only visual that most people will ever get of what these people do is what we see in a documentary like this. Yeah. And as you mentioned, it's the virtue signaling. Yeah. It's people now are going to walk away from this with the feeling that, oh my gosh, the only way that I could show that I'm doing the right thing for the environment, for the world that I care about, is by
not eating animals,
by eating only a plant-based diet. And, you know, and now I should be rallying against all of these things.
Well, and in that social thing too, here's what I'm going to point to. One of the gentlemen in the film said that this quality, you know, our quality of food is changing rapidly, really pointing to animals, that like we used to have cows that would graze on a field and now we have them, you know, locked up in small cages. We have chickens that are all grouped together and they just eat to the point of gorging themselves so that we can literally kill them for food. We're not saying that that's good or right, you know, but what about like all the other processed foods? We also didn't talk about the quality of food changing, not related to animals. How about the fact that most of the vegetables we eat today didn't exist? Or apples, you know, taking up the entire size of your hand, they used to be teeny tiny little apples, or even berries. You know, look at berries in the wild. They're teeny tiny. They're not these big gorged berries, which, by the way, like Driscoll's blueberries has a patent on their blueberries because they're not real blueberries. They were genetically modified to become these big, thick, juicy blueberries that we know. And so, yes, I do agree that the quality of food is changing so much. And so from that social standpoint, we can say like, oh my gosh, like animals aren't always raised the way that they always were. Well, guess what? Your goldfish aren't even the same. The goldfish that you're feeding your kids today are nothing like the goldfish that you ate when goldfish were first invented. And I'm not talking about a swimming fish. I'm talking about your packaged snacks that are now filled with bleached wheat, and they're enriched with all these vitamins because they, you know, bleached everything out of it. And seed oils that are inserted in, and fake sugars that are coming in. Like, yes, our quality of food is not the same that it was. It's rapidly changing, but that applies the entire spectrum. So for them to cherry pick just meat, no, guys, it's the whole supermarket.
Well, and what's also interesting and becomes evident by the second episode, that this is not necessarily just about people's health, because they heavily push the environmentalist narrative, the narrative of climate change, and how these cows are contributing to our gas house screen emissions and all this stuff. And it's like, we just, guys, a lot of it is based in fallacy and mistruths. And I even heard them bring up, you know, a statistic that is often misquoted, that the agriculture is responsible for over 14, as high as 19% of greenhouse gas emissions. And in reality, you know, beef actually accounts for 2%, because what they build into that number that they quote is everything that goes into everything from the animals itself to production to transport, which should be separated out. And transport itself is actually responsible for about 25% of greenhouse gas emissions. And yet we don't hear an outcry that people should stop driving cars. And if you want to push the narrative of electric is actually higher than, it gives us more emissions than vehicles do. So again, when you start looking at this thing as a whole, and you start going down that rabbit hole of, hey, what really does the research say? Or, you know, you start to recognize that the numbers that are often thrown out in these headlines are just not true, or they're
falsely inflated. Yeah. Well, that's it. You know, you listen to this and you think that a cow farting is destroying, you know, our entire atmosphere, but then you begin to look deeper and it's not the case at all. So I think it's so important that, you know, we look at things at face value, but understand that there's a much deeper reason for a lot of these facts.
Yes.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying our show and finding it valuable. If you could do us a quick favor, it would mean the world to us. Please take a moment to rate and review our podcast on your favorite platform. Your reviews help us reach more people and share our message. Plus, we'd love to hear your feedback. Thanks for being awesome and supporting us. Now, back to the show.
All right, well, let's dive into then some of the financial reasons.
Well, as always, somebody stands to make money. I mean, we always say follow the money, and you will find out what is behind what you're being told or what you're reading. And so there's a lot of money to be made by people altering the way that we've been consuming food for thousands of years. And it's very interesting that, you know, when we look at who's involved in this film, there was even a, you know, the CEO, I believe, of Beyond Meat,
which is always on sale in the supermarket. It's kind of weird, right? Like, they're always trying to sell that stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, the plant-based initiative or plant-based diet initiative, which comes out of Stanford, is underwritten by Beyond Meat. So right there, that's an issue. Going further, and now again, a lot of this was uncovered by Nina Teichholz as well as Zoe Harcombe, but the twin study, it was funded by the Voigt Foundation. So doing a little bit of digging, who's the Voigt Foundation? Well, they're the same ones who funded the Game Changers. Okay, so now you have the same funding from a very similar documentary. Kyle Voigt of the Voigt Foundation is part of what's called the, quote, vegan mafia. And this is a group of Silicon Valley tycoons who invest in vegan-based food companies.
Now, okay, sorry. I'm just thinking like people running around with broccoli, like hitting each other with broccoli, the vegan mafia. But here's what's crazy, you know, and I don't know the exact stats on this, but I do know that this Silicon Valley group got a lot of people to invest in vegan-based meat, which again, like the reason for vegan meat is meat, you know, like you're trying to make something that's not the thing. You know, nobody's trying to make meat-based broccoli, yeah, but we're trying to make plant-based meat all the time. So it's kind of interesting. But this group got all these people to fund Beyond Burgers and all these things that we're now seeing. And the crazy thing is, none of that stuff lived up to what they predicted. The sales were so low. People lost so much money investing into a group like this. So these groups exist, you would never know it. And there was a huge profit loss because it didn't sell the way that they predicted it would to the American public.
Well, again, it makes perfect sense that in such a scenario, you're going to do anything that is within your power to push a narrative to change the way that people eat, because they stand to make a lot of money if people start moving away from eating real fish, eggs, cheese, beef, and instead are eating these processed fake foods.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. I know this one always tickles people, which is the topic of Bill Gates. And Bill Gates has been buying up farmland, crushing small farms, all in the name of money and control. So first it was his patented seeds and fertilizers, right? So he stood to make money by utilizing these patented seeds and fertilizers on the land that he's purchasing. And this was supposed to be better for the climate. So once again, we're setting this up as, well, I'm doing this
forget
to make the world a better place.
Yeah.
So climate change. And then now he's behind the synthetic dairy and lab grown meat, along with the likes of Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, and BlackRock.
Well, and listen, you can like or not like these people. I always just look at, what are their actions telling us? Is what they're doing truly for the benefit? And of course, it's always touted that way. But I do know that Billy Gates just bought Bragg's apple cider vinegar brand, and you start to look and we'll say, I think it's called green labeling, where we're like, oh, this product is healthier because it's organic or it's whatever. But really, when you start to trace a lot of the brands back, they're really only owned by a handful of mega brands, even I don't want to say a wrong brand, but there's a lot of brands that you're like, oh, it's healthier, it's better. But then when you look at, no, it's owned by Johnson & Johnson, it's not what you think it is.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, a lot of this is, it's just all about lining bank accounts. And you're lining the bank accounts of these powerful people who just continue to get more powerful. And again, I'm not anti-capitalist. I'm about as much of a capitalist as we'll find. But what I do not like is the fact that they do this in this virtue signaling type of way, which they're trying to help people to believe that, hey, I'm doing this for the right reasons. I'm doing this to make the world a better place when, come on, be real. You're doing this to make money. Because if you're buying up more land, that means it's less land for other people to have access to and to farm on. And people will just continue to buy the lies because of the social virtues that are baked into it. But going a step further, continuing with this financial viewpoint, you got Big Pharma, who also stands to lose or make a whole lot of money based on people's health. And as we've gotten sicker, let's be honest, what's happened? There are more drugs that have hit the market as people continue to get unwell. And these are just continually presented to us as this is a solution. And as long as we remain sick, these companies will remain to make a whole lot of money.
Can we just stop there for a second? This part, it literally makes me nauseous in my stomach because so many people will believe this medication will help me. No, this medication will help. And medications will always come with side effects. There's always going to be something else it causes. And it just gives me chills down my spine to even do this episode and talk specifically about this because people are like, oh, you guys are just exaggerating. Big Pharma, the government really cares about us. No, they don't. They don't at all. It really is about profits. And when you look at a big drug company like Pfizer coming out with, I don't know if our episode is going to get flagged for me, what I'm about to say, but they come out with this COVID vaccine. Now we're seeing myocarditis, which is the inflammation of the lining of your heart. And all of a sudden Pfizer's like, hey, we've got a drug to help with the inflammation of the lining of your heart. And I'm like, hold on a second. Can we just step back and look at the domino effect of these things? We've never had 14 and 15 year olds with heart attacks, but now all of a sudden something that was introduced to the market has now, again, causation and causality, who knows? But now all of a sudden we're seeing something we never saw before in human history, but it's okay. We have a drug to treat that too. So I always wonder what's next? What's going to be the next thing to solve the first thing?
Well, and what kills me about this is that there's going to be people out there who are listening to this and saying, oh, well, again, correlation is not causation and what have you. It's like, but at what point do you say something is not right? Yeah. I recognize that something is wrong and you start looking at what has changed.
Yeah.
And I'm only saying this because I see so many people on the internet, of course, especially a lot of researchers these days who are putting down the information that somebody else is spouting, and they're putting it down or being dismissive of it because there's not a randomized control study to prove it, or because a lot of the meta-analysis don't show what this person is saying, which when they talk about at least what they're observing and then tie it back to the hard science, it's like it seems pretty obvious, but then there's always going to be those people who don't want to hear it because in their minds they don't see the proof. But let's be honest, who puts out a lot of the quote unquote proof? I mean, a lot of it is funded by big food, big pharma. And then, and I hate to say this because I think that there's a lot of people who they go into their professions with the right reason, but let's just be truthful. There is a lot of doctors who are complicit in all this. They are not brought into their universities and taught about exercise and nutrition. They're taught about recognizing symptoms and what drugs to prescribe according to those symptoms.
Well, for somebody who's not sure about what you're saying, think about it like this. There's a hospital, right? And a pharmaceutical rep goes in and wines and dines. And we know this firsthand, right? They buy donuts, they buy coffee, they bring gifts, they do all this stuff. When's the last time a personal trainer went into that hospital and wined and dined the doctors? Like what is it that we would give them? You know, or a nutritionist that's talking about the benefits of whole foods. Like where are they in this equation? And I think just something as simple as that helps a person who may be not totally on board with what it is that we're sharing here today. Like, oh yeah, that actually kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Well, when you get down to it again, the entire system is built upon money, and removing something from that system, removing the drugs, removing the foods that are causing people to need the drugs would cause the entire system to collapse. I mean, you just think about this for a moment. If people got healthier because of the food that they're eating, then there wouldn't be as much need for the drugs that they're taking. If there's less need for the drugs that they're taking, there's less need for doctors to be prescribing those drugs. And you just go down the list. Then you have nurses and such. Like, medicine was really, you know, designed to help people around acute problems. There's an emergency. A kid gets hurt. You bring him to the hospital. Of course, I want a surgeon to set my leg in place. I don't want a holistic nutrition person or a holistic doctor doing that. I mean, let's be real. There is a place for medicine and there's a place for these holistic interventions. But the problem is that we've become so reliant on just one of those interventions, which is the medical one. And again, that's what all the money is built upon. And that's why we see such resistance to a lot of these natural interventions or people who are saying, hey, you don't need to take that. You should actually eat this or change this lifestyle pattern. We're told they're quacks. Like, that person's crazy. I mean, for how long have chiropractors been shunned that, oh, what they do is just quackery? And yet it's based on hard science that, like, our spinal cord is actually pretty important. And most of our communication stems from that. And yet we think that it's nuts that by adjusting that or helping somebody to get into better balance, that it's not going to create better health. So I know I went on a little bit of a tirade there, but, you know, it is infuriating.
Yeah. All right. Well, in the spirit of keeping this neutral, let's talk about the political implications, you know, and I think you really did cover it. You know, he or she who controls the food supply has the power. You know, it's, we all need food to live. We all need food to have energy and survive. And so if you are able to control that food, you actually are able to control people's health. So you control health and you control people. And, you know, I'm trying to think of a great analogy for this. You know, it's kind of like, if we think about building materials, you know, I can go out in my backyard and cut down a piece of a tree, right? And use that for fuel or use that for building material. But, you know, we have that same wood that's pressure treated and sold in a hardware store or a Home Depot or a Lowe's, you know, and we can go buy it over there. And I think if we just look at something simple like wood, you know, there's chickens that lay eggs naturally, but hang on a second, we can create tofurkey. you know, and it's that tofu turkey. So maybe a turkey we'd be comparing this to. And if I do that, you can't have that tofurkey without me, the company. You can't get access to that without me. And so if we can create that and turn people away from the natural way, which again, you know, you could say pressure treated wood is better to build a house with than just, you know, straight raw wood. Yes, there's definitely benefits to it. But if we as a society say, we're no longer going to get these things naturally from nature, we're only going to get them from the company who can produce them, there's a lot more money to be made over here. I don't know if that's the best example, but it's an example to help paint the picture.
I think you actually were kind of hitting the nail on the head. I thought you would have gone just a slightly different direction with it just by simply saying that, hey, he who controls the lumber really controls home building, right? I mean, if you are the lumber yard and you're the one who's dictating the cost of these things or the supply of these things, then only so many contractors can build homes. Or at what cost can they build them? And that's what we're seeing here. For the longest time, we used to say that he who controls the oil controls everything.
Yeah.
Right. And that's how a lot of these Saudi princes and kings and such got so rich, is like they had control over the oil that was being sold to the rest of the world. But I think that now what we're seeing is a shift from, since oil maybe doesn't have to play as big of a role as it once did because of alternative forms of energy, he who controls the food supply, I really do believe, controls everything.
Everything.
And it makes sense why you see these powerful individuals buying up land, because, hey, on that land, what are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
Like a piece of land by itself is worth nothing. It's what you do on that land, or what that land has the possibility of producing, that really makes all the difference. And I think that it's pretty obvious for anyone listening to this to see that these three things, the social, the financial, the political, like they are inextricably tied to one another. There is no separation between these things whatsoever. You know, the way the big food and big farmer, they make money, they ensure that policies are in place that allow them to go about the business of their business. That's really it. And that happens through lobbying. It's happening through bribery. And a heavy dose of marketing, which we know is very interesting. I mean, like, tell everybody about the difference between marketing drugs in the US and anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, it's actually illegal. Countries have disallowed pharmaceutical companies from advertising their products to the public. You actually have to go through a medical professional to learn about it. But here in America, you're in good old America, you're like, oh, type 2 diabetes, I'm going to try that. And you go to your doctor, you're like, hey, I want that drug. And the doctor's like, okay, right? They make a cut, the pharmaceutical company makes a cut, everybody makes a cut, and you get the drug that you saw on television. You're not allowed to advertise that in other countries. And it's illegal. It's against the law. It's kind of like in Italy. GMOs are illegal. They are
good
not
for you,
allowed.
Italy. Good for you.
They're not allowed in the food system, you know? And so, yeah, you start looking at stuff like that. You're like, all right, Mike and Corey Bass, maybe there's something to what you're saying here.
Yeah. And listen, it's going to come as no surprise to anyone listening to this. Like, there is an extensive amount of corruption that takes place in DC. I mean, you'd have to be living under a rock and completely naive to the world to not think that there is not a tremendous amount of corruption that's taking place. And then you have all of these organizations that are supposed to be looking out for us. Organizations like the American Heart Association, the USDA, the FDA, NIH, the World Health Organization, they're all corrupt. I mean, they all have some form of corruption. I mean, they may have come about with all of the right intentions, but it's certainly—
And there may be good people that are working there.
I'm sure
that really
there are.
Think they're fighting the good fight. But yeah, even at the highest levels, there are forms of corruption that exist, because if someone comes to you and says, hey, I'm going to donate $1 million to your organization if you say this, humans are humans, you know, they're not going to, no, I'm not going to say that. People should be eating cows, you know, no Beyond Burgers here. All right, 5 million. All right. Maybe we'll put that in our new guidelines, you know.
And that's why I think that people need to be advocates for themselves. They need to not rely upon what an organization has told them, not what a doctor has told them, not what a fitness professional has told them, or nutritionist. Like, you need to be an advocate for yourself and do your own research. And I know a lot of people won't do that. And it's a little disheartening, because, you know, now you're simply putting your your health into someone else's hands. And at the end of the day,
it's dangerous.
You know, I believe in extreme accountability. You are accountable for yourself. No one else is to blame but you. So if something goes awry, I mean, I don't look at who around me can I blame for this. I say, hey, what part was I complicit in this? You know, what didn't I do? What due diligence did I not do?
Or what was I not even aware of too? You know, I mean, there's a lot of people that will get cancer because of where they work or where they live, not realizing that there was, you know, disposal of toxic materials. So I also want to throw that in there too, but it's like, we don't know what we don't know. And that's why our aim is to educate you as much as possible so that you can make those decisions. Now, I think we should probably pause at this point, make this part one. We didn't even dive into the study yet, you guys. But I think in part two, we're going to dive into the study, who did it, what it was called, the names on this study, and really how it all came to be.
Series. I'm excited about this part because I think this is really where the rubber hits the road. And for watching the documentary, you can watch it, but you can watch it through a different lens and understand what you're seeing. And I think that's going to be the beautiful part of this next part is when once we discuss the details of the study and you understand what the data showed and now what you're being shown on television, it's going to bring a lot of this stuff to light.
Thanks for tuning in. If you're a busy working parent like us, you understand the daily challenges. Our mission is to make exercise and nutrition simple and exciting, helping you and your family thrive even on the busiest days. We've got a fantastic free 5-day online challenge that's tailor-made for super busy people like you.
If you like a high-vibe workout environment with professional coaching, swing by one of our franchise studios for a free intro workout.
Check the show notes for details or head on over to purephysique.com when you have a moment. We know those moments are rare.
Until next time, lift weights, eat meat, and never forget, you were created on purpose for a purpose.
Why?
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.